So we've been asking you this morning, who gave you permission to laugh 10 years ago after 9/11? The whole country was caught by the tragedy, but gradually we began to laugh. For me, it was The Onion, that flimsy little newsprint tabloid that gave me permission to laugh after 9/11. Hijackers surprised to find selves in hell. We expected eternal paradise for this, say suicide bombers. The subheads were, God angrily clarifies don't kill rule, and the classic U.S. vows to defeat whoever it is we're at war with. That issue of The Onion on September 26th was shocking, raw, and funny. And it was on the stands as David Letterman was weeping on late night, and Jon Stewart was part of the national hand-holding after 9/11.
Good evening, and welcome to The Daily Show. We are back. This is our first show since the tragedy in New York City, and there's no other way really to start the show than to ask you at home the question that we asked the audience here tonight and that we've asked everybody that we know here in New York since September 11th, and that is, are you okay? And we pray that you are and that your family is.
Who gave you permission to laugh after 9/11? How did Jon Stewart give himself permission to ask to laugh? It's a subject our colleague Jim O'Grady has been investigating as part of our co-producer WNYC's look at the 10 years since the attacks that changed so much in the world. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, John.
This is a fascinating subject. It's a fascinating moment, how that turning point happened. What have people been telling you?
Well, comedians were saying, like everyone else, they were overwhelmed at the beginning, and they had this peculiar problem. This is their way of life, amusing people, making them laugh. And in this moment, it seemed like this was not going to happen anytime soon, and they wondered how would they get back to business. And you're right, The Onion was very important. I have a friend who says that as much as the front page of The New York Times, those onions deserve to be in the Smithsonian Institution.
And as I recall, will be at some point. Yeah,
I hope so. I think God clarified angrily the "don't kill" rule, if I'm not mistaken, by saying, "I effing mean it this time."
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a way of saying we're not going to be overwhelmed by this.
And you know, there were comedians, and you talked with a bunch. We're going to get to that in a second. Some of whom sort of wanted to go there. In other words, felt a personal responsibility, or maybe a fetish almost, with the moment of going there. And then there were others who felt that, in fact, it's our responsibility to do something other than humor. Who falls down on what side, depending on where they were?
Yeah, you're right. The reactions were various. I talked to several comedians, more than a dozen. One said he took months off to mourn. Another said he went through his act and he eliminated things that now seemed trivial.
You know, it's surprising to me that the Saturday Night Live folks were on the latter group. They were the ones that sort of stepped back. Here's Will Ferrell on the media.
The political and topical humor that we're usually known for, we're going to have to kind of, you know, keep our foot off the gas pedal for a while here. And we like we were saying before, we don't know for how long. We don't know when is that point when the audience is ready to poke fun at people again.
Now, that's Will Ferrell talking a week after 9/11. That's before The Onion.
Right.
So everyone was kind of in that mode. But then you've got Gilbert Gottfried, who definitely wanted to go there. Explain, first of all, what he accomplished, and we'll play a little bit, and then what your conversations were like.
Gilbert is a special case. I mean, I talked to him, and he stated as a goal, this is what makes him unusual, he wanted to tell the first tasteless joke after 9/11. And by the way, a footnote on Will Ferrell, you know, he rightly said, we don't know what we're going to do. We're going to keep our foot off the gas pedal. I think a little more than a month later, he was then back doing George Bush impersonations. 7 years later, he had a 90-minute one-man play on Broadway, all George Bush jokes. So it's just inevitable that we go back to doing what we need, which is political satire.
When the pendulum swings, it really swings. And over the last, you know, 10 years, I mean, once it was open, first it was like tiptoeing back into laughter.
Yes.
And then it suddenly became, of course, by 2006, it was open season. But let's listen to what Gottfried sort of went for. Do we have the Gottfried that we can play? Here he is talking about the moment, and you can kind of hear his mind working, making the calculation, are we ready yet?
I went up there and I said, I have to leave early tonight. I have to fly to L.A. I couldn't get a direct flight. We have to make a stop at the Empire State Building. And the audience started, like, there was a loud gasp. There was mumbling back and forth, and you could hear the chairs move. It was like 10 years in front of that audience And then I went into telling the aristocrats joke.
A talent agent is sitting in his office. A family walks in. Man, woman, their two kids, and their little dog. Their talent agent goes, what kind of an act do you do?
And that somehow turned it all around.
He says, what do you call yourself? And they go, the aristocrats.
Jim O'Grady, reporter for WNYC Radio, our co-producer. You talked with Gilbert. What was it like for him to revisit that moment?
He was actually quite thoughtful, you know, and you heard that real laugh there at the end, where minutes before, you know, Gilbert telling us joke about stopping at the Empire State Building, even now is a little tasteless, and this is 3 weeks after 9/11. So you deserved, and people even shouted to him at that moment. This is a Friars Club roast in New York City. Mm-hmm. They said one person just shouted too soon.
And, too soon? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I remember being at a dinner party. I don't normally drop names like this, but I remember talking with Stephen Colbert. He was then with The Daily Show. And he described, in many ways, the way that Will Ferrell talked to Brooke Gladstone, about how the comedians were on one side or the other. They were like, we have to go here. We need to be first. And that a lot of the comedians for The Daily Show felt bad that they weren't necessarily first coming back, that it was a real anxiety, a real heated debate about when to laugh.
That is so interesting. It's true. Life is problematic. Families are absurd. Bosses are mean. We need humor. It's inevitable. It's going to come back to cope with what we do on a daily basis.
Let's play one final piece of tape and get your comment here.
We saw a lot of it. I mean, I think we saw a lot with comics where they would close their act with this serious 9/11 speech.
Yes.
And then, you know, to try to get a standing ovation. And it's like, you know, and we would look at each other, you know, and be like, oh, God.
Why didn't I think of that?
You invited those writers into the studio.
Yes.
What was the impression they gave you before we go?
That's what they did. They said they didn't. You can't make fun of 9/11. That's a non sequitur in a way. You make fun of the reaction to 9/11, the way the culture changes, the way individuals deal with it. That is funny. The way even comedians overreact by standing up and giving patriotic speeches at the end of their act in a maudlin way. That's funny. That deserves to be spoofed.
And Jim O'Grady, reporter for WNYC Radio, our co-producer, explores it in part as part of our WNYC 10 Years After 9/11 coverage. What gave you permission to laugh again after 9/11? Tell us your story by calling 877-8-MY-TAKE. Jim, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
You can see Jim's reporting on our website, thetakeaway.org, and you'll get a light show as technicians shift 88 searchlights into position to create the now iconic tribute in light that we're going to see this weekend. I'm John Huckenberry. Celeste Headlee out today. This is The Takeaway.